You're listening to the Mistress of None podcast with Erin Harkes.
Hello, hello, hello. This is Erin Harkes with the Mistress of None. And we have something completely wild and different for you this time. Something that I thought might be cool to try. Whatever. We'll see how it goes. My good friend, Rick Marshall, recently got a job at the Gazette doing all of their digital stuff now. And it's just the perfect job for him. Rick and I have known each other for a very long time. And he's launching his own podcast through the Gazette. And we have been talking back and forth. And he wanted me to be his first guest on his show. And I was, of course, honored and flattered and was happy to do it. And so what we did was made his episode my episode. So this episode of Mistress of None is actually his first podcast of him introducing me. And I was laughing because, I mean, even when I'm interviewing somebody, I'm doing most of the talking anyway. So let's be real. But this was just a fun interview and somebody that I've known for about 20 years. And I'm going to let the interview speak for itself. It was a really wonderful time. And I think he's going to do great things at the Gazette. I'm happy that he's there. And I'm happy that he's my friend. He's a great guy. And we had a good time. And I hope you enjoy this. And stay tuned for The Mistress of None with Rick Marshall.
You're listening to the Mistress of None podcast with Erin Harkes.
Erin, I want to start by actually talking to you a little bit about how far we've come, because I was thinking about it the other day, and I realized that the first time I met you was in a bar that was absolutely flooded with cigarette smoke. And I think that it's so telling that you and I go so far back that we come from a point where people didn't realize that cramming everyone into a small enclosed space and filling it with secondhand smoke was maybe not a good idea.
Yeah, weird. Also, as a vocalist, that it didn't bother me. I mean, I smoked myself at the time, so I didn't care. Oddly enough, I did get hired by Savannah's one time because I was trying to make some extra scratch, and he hired me to clean the walls of the place. So I can tell you how much tar existed on those walls. It was one of the most disgusting jobs I ever did. But watch, it was like it got painted. That's how different it was when I got done with it.
Well, I can tell you that after the smoking ban went through and the next time that I went back to that bar, I didn't realize the floors were the color they were. Like, I was like, is this a new bar? Did they refinish the place? Is it different? Am I in the right place?
I think they refinished the place because I think there was carpet for a while. Bad idea.
Well, that's how far we go back, though.
I like
bringing that up about the fact that, like, we predate nationwide bans on smoking.
We go very far back. I would say at least half our lives.
Life moves pretty fast.
Yes.
I haven't even begun my career in journalism when we met, and you were still sort of figuring things out musically, I know, as well.
Mm-hmm.
Fast forward a few decades now. I'm sitting here interviewing you in a fancy studio. You are a award-winning, multi-talented musician, comedian. You've got a recurring gig at Cafe Lena. This is the point where you're like,
yeah, no, hey, bring it. I love it. I could be able to fit my fat head out the door, but.
You know, I got started covering the art scene in the region, and I left for a little while. I came back. You were in it. You've been in it from that time. How have things changed? Because I feel like you have a unique perspective on from the inside.
Yeah. What's funny is that when we first met, I didn't even know that you had any like journalistic ambitions. And then like you started to work at like Metroland. So like that, you know, normally I would find that thing out first. And then that is why I would befriend you. But we went, see, again, against the grain, like completely opposite of all the other friendships that I had when I first kind of came to the Capital Region. But it's, I mean, it's changed. It changes every minute, the landscape of. I'm very excited now for what I have seen in the Capital Region, especially with the Cafe Lena show and the just amount of talent of original music in the Capital Region is so inspiring that it actually caused me to shift my priorities, which were playing covers in bars, which paid well, but I started to really resent. And so seeing some of these other musicians doing it made me completely shift and want to get back into the original music. And I really want to see that grow in the Capital Region. Like when I first started out, it didn't matter what kind of music, but there was like a hopping scene in downtown. Like you could get dropped off on Pearl Street and have 15 bars to choose from, Broadway, maybe make it up to Lark Street. There was either a band or a DJ, but every single place had something rocking all the time. And I don't think we'll ever get back to that. But I mean, honestly, the talent in this area, I feel like we could have some sort of festival that would rival something in Austin. I know that's a bold statement, but I believe in it.
Hey, you got to start somewhere. Bold statements.
Yeah.
Nothing ventured, nothing gained.
Yeah.
But before we get into some of your current projects, I do have a really important question for you here.
Please.
So have you reached the point where I can sell this off and afford a small island?
Because no.
This is a classic. This is a collector's
item. Does it still have my lipstick in it?
It is a burn CD of your first album.
Oh, my God.
Your lipstick on the inside cover. There's not even a sticker on the CD. It's just handwritten. And I think my favorite part, though, however, is the Hotmail address.
Yes.
Underneath the track listing.
Yes. That was how to get in touch with me, because I never, ever wanted to give out my number. That CD and the giving it to you is one of my all-time favorite musical memories, because we were at Savannah's. I was very new. That CD, not only did I produce that CD, if you can even call it that, all by myself, I burned copies of it. I stuffed the CDs, and it's not a regular sleeve. It's like an old plastic CD-ROM, whatever the hell. And the spine and everything, I had to cut it to certain proportions. I mean, you could see I used the best printer possible. And,
yes.
But the crew that you hung out with, you guys came to Savannah's. It was your birthday. I played Murphy with the blues band.
My favorite.
And your face will forever be etched in my brain. Like you were swooning a little bit. And it was really sweet because nobody had ever really made that big of a deal about me. And so giving that to you and knowing what that meant to you meant so much to me. So there's been a mutual, admiration kind of thing brewing for over 2 decades now with us.
Thank you. That's very nice of you. I first got to know you as a musician, of course, and we've talked a lot about that here, but I do think it's interesting that you made this pivot to comedy. And I remember when you told me about it, when I heard about it, the first thing that went through my head was, that tracks. I mean, that makes sense. That makes sense. It wasn't even because sometimes people make this switch to different sort of stage performances and you're like, how's that going to work?
Mm-hmm.
But it made perfect sense to me. And your latest album, Uncle Ernie,
yes,
just came out. And so I do want to know maybe a little bit more about what comedy does for you, because you and I have talked privately about like what comedy means to you and what being up there has done for you and has meant for you. But I'd love it if you could talk a little bit about why comedy.
Sure. I think it all boils down to not to be super reductive, but I think that I've realized, and as much as I hate to admit, I've realized in the past few years that there's something about having undivided attention that I guess I have craved my entire life. And so the way music played into the comedy and then back into the music is interesting, because I would do these solo shows where I was completely ignored and it never bothered me. And then I would do a show where I did original music and had a captive audience. And I would start to tell stories in between the songs and I would get the laughter. And that felt like that was just an endorphin that I hadn't experienced sober, I guess. So when I first decided to try comedy, like when I got done, I was shaking. I was just, it was like such an adrenaline rush and I wanted to chase that. And so over the years doing comedy, like good or bad, like the best shows, just having people just sit and listen and tell the jokes and just feeling that connection with the audience, that's kind of spilled back into the music, which made me want to do more originals, more listening room kind of vibes where people are just engaged. And I always feel embarrassed to say that I want that kind of undivided attention. But overall, I'm not embarrassed, because who wouldn't want somebody to pay attention to their art?
That makes sense. What is the hardest part of comedy for you? Because there's a lot of people, when they hear about stand-up comedy, like, oh, I could never do that.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest obstacle for a lot of people. Years ago, I did a feature where I followed local stand-up comedians, sort of who were just getting to learn how to do it, to sort of going to classes. I believe it was out in Broad Alban area there, to a comedy club that used to be out there.
Was that a barn?
Yes.
Yeah, the farm.
Yes, and I followed the comedians who were taking the class there, and sort of culminated with them doing a performance on New Year's Eve, opening for the act that had come in. And it was wonderful to watch them overcome that hurdle.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious for you, what is the hardest part of comedy for you? Is that a big hurdle just to get up there? Because it seems like it's not. You're used to the stage.
It would seem like that. I'm faking it. You know, the thing about comedy that has always been so interesting to me is the dichotomy between being so, like, afraid and so self-conscious about things and really needing that kind of validation, and then putting yourself in this vulnerable position where if it doesn't go well, like, it's a horrible feeling. And
you're
so,
out there. You're out there in front of everyone.
So I can't think of anything else where it'd be like, you know, like a firefighter who's afraid of fire, you know, like, not to, you know, reduce that or anything, but it's the only career that I can think of where we're kind of broken individuals. Like, we've had a lot of trauma. We've had drug or alcohol problems. I'm painting a broad stroke, but if you talk to any comedian, most of them have had some sort of trauma in their life. And we just need that kind of validation. And we put ourselves in this position where we don't know if we're going to get that or not. And we risk it every time. And that is terrifying. But we do it anyway. You know, so I'm proud of myself for doing it, but also I'm like, what are you, an idiot?
There's always that voice.
Yeah.
Well, I do want to switch gears, because I really want to talk about one of the biggest things that you have going on right now. This Cafe Lena recurring series, the Lena Go Round Songwriter Showcase. For those who might not be familiar with either A, the series, but B, Cafe Lena, because it is a massively historic venue.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, thank you. I, again, in my process of trying to find more ways to do original music, I played my very first show at Cafe Lena last summer. And a lot of people said, which was very flattering to me, that they couldn't believe that was my first time. Like, I had people that worked there, they're like, you should have done this like years ago. And I was like, to me, I was doing all the covers and I was, you know, playing like 8 or 9 times a week. And I was like, I wanted to wait until I knew I could bring a show that I could be proud of and a show that would sell very well. And that was last summer, and I sold out. It was all but 4 tickets, but then somebody in the audience got up and bought the last 4, which was like, I still don't know who it was.
That's amazing.
Yeah, like, the woman came by the door. She was like, you sold out. And I was like, like, it was just a nice moment. So like anything else, like with comedy and music, is when I don't see enough opportunities to do something, I try to create those opportunities. Like, that's why I produce so many comedy shows, because there's not very many places to perform in the Capital Region otherwise. And so I noticed that there was things like Song City in Troy, which did a songwriter in the round thing, like a la Nashville, which I saw down in Nashville years ago. And it was just so great. And then I, you know, my friend Josh was doing something up in Glens Falls where it was the whole songs in the round thing. Is just, it's a really beautiful concept. And I was like, all right, well, there's one in Glens Falls. There's one in Troy. There should be one in Saratoga. And I actually approached another venue first, and they kind of took the idea and ran with it in a completely different direction. They turned it into like a karaoke contest. And they were like, but you can still be involved. And I'm like, no, I can't.
Yeah, that's not the same.
No, that's awful. And I don't want to be. And I was talking to somebody and they were like, why don't you ask Cafe Lena? And I was like, because there's no way.
It's Cafe Lena.
It's Cafe Lena. Like, why am I really going to shoot above, you know, my
Bob
pay grade?
Dylan played here.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I played the first Eddie's Hall of Fame, where for the Lena Award, they asked me to play a Bob Dylan song. Like, I know the responsibility that you have if you get the chance to play a club like this. And so I was like, you know what? The worst they could say is no. And I'm no stranger to rejection.
And I messaged Sarah and she wrote back pretty quickly. And she goes, I love this idea. And I almost burst into tears. I still pinching myself. I still can't believe that I get the opportunity to do a monthly show at this place.
Tell us about the monthly show. Songwriters,
yep.
Locally.
It's myself and three others. I've just been able to pick. I try to keep like a good variety. Like I'll get, you know, the first few that I did, I got people that don't normally play acoustic. So it was fun to like, you know, have them like the
unplugged.
Yeah. Like one of my favorites was John Glenn, who I love the bands that he has been in over the years. And he goes, yeah, so such and such is going to come with me. I go, no. I go, you're playing solo and it's going to be acoustic. And he was like, okay. And he was like terrified in a way, like just nervous. And he did so well. And it was so great to hear the songs that I knew of his stripped down like that. And I mean, I've had Girl Blue, I've had Josh Morris, I've had Reese Fulmer. I got Kim Buckley, who's kind of like coming out of retirement. She was huge for me when I first started out.
Oh, for sure.
And it's really inspiring. And if anything, like it just keeps me on track to commit to doing the original music, which is really what I want to do very badly. And I've been writing more. And I'm so inspired. And I just, like I said, I can't believe I get to do it.
Well, I did want to ask you about the original music side because music and performing and all of these things locally, that's such a churn. It can really like burn out a lot of people. A lot of the performers that were regulars around this scene back when you and I first met aren't performing anymore. Mm-hmm. I've seen a lot of people who used to be performing all over the place. You'd see them everywhere who have sort of vanished now. What keeps you going? How do you feel about sort of making, you know, music these days?
For me, I think the most important thing is don't try to compare. Don't overthink things. Like when I write a song, I just have to just let it out. And then maybe I'll go back and fix it up later. But I've always impeded myself by going like, oh, no, that's not good. Or that's not this or that's not that. It's like, just write it. Go back and fix it later. Just write it. And that's been helping me a lot. I mean, I get burned out 3-4 times a day, you know, but I'm still an optimist because I remember the best shows and how those feel as opposed to the awful ones that make me just want to quit everything. I definitely, like I had something happen last month, which really put me in this very like deep depression for a few days. And luckily I can usually get myself out of it pretty quickly, but it was a rejection that hit like a ton of bricks. And I took a day and just, you know, licked my wounds. And I had people going like, listen, it's not. And I go, I need a day to feel horrible about this. And I had this moment where I was like, you could either just say like, screw it and be done or go for something bigger. And I, like a masochist, I decided I was like, because it was comedy related. And I was like, I should quit. And I was like, nope. Instead, I threw myself out there and I went and I did a week of comedy in New York, being one of, you know, like strap hangers, getting no money, you know, maybe having a great audience, maybe having a terrible audience. And I took the risk and it was great. I'm so proud of myself that I did it because it could have gone either way. And so I guess ultimately I'm still optimistic about things and my career.
Were you out on the street, you know, trying to get people into your comedy show? Were you one of them?
No, I have not had to bark.
I know them.
I have not had to bark. Luckily, I've done well enough where I get to just be on the show. But it is so sweet, though. I see like some of these younger comics that are just starting out and they're like, they're barking.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that drive and that ambition because I had days like that. I had a show that I tried to produce like 20 years ago where I literally flyered Lark Street, like literally just like threw flyers out in the air and like hopes that people would pick it up and come to the show. So it's like, that's how you learn. You have to be willing to do the odd jobs that nobody else wants to do. Like you have to shovel crap and just do the things that nobody else wants to do. And
you have to scrape cigarette tar off of
exactly,
bar walls.
Exactly. You have to volunteer to do things like that. But whatever helps get you on somebody's radar. And also you have to make sure that you're not being taken advantage of, because there are some clubs around that will just use you. And you have to just step back and be like, is this going to lead somewhere, or am I happy with just being able to perform there? Because if you think it's going to lead to something, you're probably wrong. Especially like some of the places in the city that do bringers. Like there was this one guy, I did like 8 bringers for this one club, and I finally got the chance to audition for the owner, and Jerry Seinfeld showed up right before my set and the owner left with him. So after doing like 8 bringers where I brought like 15, 20 people each time, my big shot was blown, and they were like, well, he'll watch your tape. And I don't know if he ever watched my tape, but I had to kind of sever ties with that. And I would love to work at that club, but I'm not going to go through that again. I'm not going to make my New York friends come out and see the same 6 minutes every time. Now when I go down, I don't even ask people to come out. I'm like, if they hear about it and they want to come see a show, like I met my cousin for dinner and I said, don't come to the show. Just meet me for dinner. And he was like, oh, all right. You sure? I'm like, yeah, you've supported me enough.
Put in your time.
Thank you.
You've bought enough of the necessary drinks.
You're tapped out. It's fine. When it matters, I'll ask you to come.
Well, I do want to know, too, where else we can see you lately, because you have so much going on. I know you have several monthly programs that you're doing. Where else can we see you? Music, comedy, what's going on?
All right. Well, music, obviously the Cafe Lena thing, we're taking the summer off. So after May, we're not doing June, July, and August, but we're going to pick up with a vengeance in the fall. Hopefully by this time next year, it will be successful enough where we can keep it going throughout the year. We're kind of like, it's doing well, but it's still like, you know, with what they can do there in the summertime, it was like, let's not risk it with, you know, the track and everything like that. So hopefully next year it'll be like kicking and it will be a no-brainer that we keep it running all year long. So that's the last Wednesday of every month. This one coming up, speaking of like older performers that I adore, I've got like Roseanne Ranieri on this. I'm going to cry the whole time she performs. Like, I love this woman. I cannot believe that I get to work with her again after all this time, you know?
I can go either way, the crying the whole time she performs.
Listen, I'm emotional. I don't know. but that's amazing. I'm looking forward to that. And then I have the first Wednesday of every month, I'm at Universal Preservation Hall for a show I have called Women Aren't Funny. And it's all female comics. And that's been going great. What's funny is like sometimes when we only get like 60 or 70 people out, to me, it feels like a failure if I don't sell it out. And I'm like, could you have gotten 60 or 70 people to come out 3 years ago on a Wednesday in the middle of winter? It's like, this is a success. Like, it's okay. Like,
it's a win.
Go easy on yourself. I've just put so much pressure on myself. So that's been going very well. I've been getting to work with some really amazing female comedians from, you know, New York and Boston and locally. And then my other regular monthly one, which is something that has shocked a lot of people.
Me included.
Yes, is I'm doing a kids open mic at EMAC and Bolio's the first Sunday of every month.
That is just playing with fire. As a parent myself, I wouldn't do an open mic in my own home, mm-hmm. let alone in a public venue.
I would never do an adult open mic ever again.
Okay. Fair enough. But kids?
They are amazing. It is so, like, I could cry right now. It is so fulfilling. They are so sweet and they just want it. And honestly, I started out as a businesswoman. My friend that just bought EMAC and Bolio's said that she was trying to think of some things to do in the colder months to bring in when not everybody was eating as much ice cream. It like hit me like a few days later. And it was a complete business move on my part. I said, you know, you get kids, all of these family members are going to come in and watch them. And then I did my first one and I was like, oh my God, I love this. These kids, they're just so, like, we had our second one just last Sunday. And this one little girl who came and played the fiddle the first time, when I called her up, she comes like running up, like she was excited to see me. And like, they're awesome. And they're going for it. And I'm so glad that even though I said it started out as a business move, that I get to provide an opportunity for these kids. You know, like, there were no open mics for kids when I was first banging it out on the piano.
Not at all. This was a shock to me when I saw that you were doing this. And This could have been excruciating or it could be absolutely rewarding, which is what it sounds
like
it's been.
Yeah, it really has. I look forward to it. These kids are amazing and they're so grateful and they have like different levels of talent. Some of them are brand new. Some of them have been working on it for a while. But I mean, I feel like, you know, maybe at this time in my life, in my career, I can focus on helping other people do some of the things that I've done and maybe even being more successful than me without being bitter about it at all.
And the best part is this time you're not doing a, you know, open jam in a cigarette smoke filled brew.
That is true. That is true.
I feel like it's come full circle, but in a much, much more rewarding, enriching way.
Yes. I mean, that was fun and that was a good start, but I mean, I'm lucky that I got out of that scenario alive. You know, there was a...
I think we all are.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really interesting to be on this side of that.
Erin, I got to say, thank you so much for doing this. I really do appreciate it. This has been a weird, wonderful trip down memory lane.
Yeah.
There's been music, there's been comedy, there's been hazy periods, both literally and figuratively, that we've talked about here. But I am so glad that you could be a guest here.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
You're listening to the Mistress of None podcast with Erin Harkes.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. That was fun, I thought. Rick is awesome. That CD thing was honestly the cutest thing ever, and it's such a fond memory of mine, just having him buy the CD, and his buddies were like, it's his birthday, it's his birthday, and like I put lipstick on to kiss the CD and sign it, and stuff like that. I mean, stuff like that still makes me feel pretty cool this day and age. But back then it was really, really special because, I mean, I didn't have fans. I didn't have people that were coming out to see me. So that really meant a great deal to me. And it still does. And I'm glad that he and I have become friends, that he's not just a fan. Like I'm a fan of his too. And we're good friends. And that does happen sometimes. And it's a really great feeling. So it was a lot of fun. And I wish him the best of luck on his podcast. I hope you'll all check that out. And, like I said, he's going to do great things with the Gazette, and I can't wait to see what he does. This is coming out just a little bit late this week because I wanted to align it with when his was coming out, but I'll be back on track for next Wednesday. Next Wednesday is April 24th, and it will be me interviewing him, so you'll get a little more to the story. But also April 24th, keep in mind, Cafe Lena, Lena Go Round, all ladies this month. Get your tickets. This is the last one for me until September. There will be one in May, but Reese Fulmer will be hosting it for me because I am going away. So get your tickets at erinharkes.com. And then May 1st, we got Jane Condon at Women Aren't Funny at UPH. Get some tickets to that. A couple other cool gigs coming up. I'm going to Rochester the first weekend in May to open for Judy Gold at the Comedy at the Carlson. I'm going to put that on my website soon. Very excited for that. I'm excited to finally work at that amazing club and to get to open for Judy Gold. I've been a fan of hers for a really long time. So fun things coming up. Keep following erinharkes.com. Make sure you like, listen, follow, share, all that good stuff. Tell your friends, tell your enemies. Just because you don't like them doesn't mean they can't listen. We're having a lot of fun. We have a lot of great things coming up. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks to Rick for having me be your first. And tune in next week to hear me interview him right back. Follow me at Mistress of None on all the social medias. And Erin Harkes on all the social medias, and I'm tired. I'm going to bed. I love you all. Thanks for tuning in. Talk to you soon. Bye.
You're listening to the Mistress of None podcast with Erin Harkes.